This morning we're going to look at a passage from the Gospel of Matthew, and I'll just go through it slowly, reading a couple of verses at a time. A different way of kind of doing things this morning, but sometimes that's helpful. There's so much in this great and amazing story of Jesus, who has just at this point finished feeding 5,000, and now that event is over, and Jesus is sending the disciples across the Sea of Galilee. He himself goes up to pray while they struggle in the boat with the waves and the wind, far from land, as we're told. And then Jesus comes walking to them on the water. And Peter, seeing this, asking the Lord, "Lord, if you command me, I will come to you." And Jesus says, "Come." And so then they get back in the boat together and go on from there. But this is a wonderful story. And we'll take it from the very beginning and dig in a little more detail here. So we read this, verses 22 and 23. Immediately, so the feeding of the 5,000 is complete. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to a mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. And let's first just take note that Jesus dismisses the crowd. I find that interesting. Twice, Matthew says that he dismissed the crowd. He said goodbye to them. That's the way one of the other translations has it, as he was saying goodbye to them. So he didn't just take off without some common courtesy. He doesn't fly in and fly out, you know, on his Learjet. He stops, takes some time with them, dismisses the crowd, says goodbye to them, extends common courtesy at the close of this amazing feeding on the 5,000. He is with them then the whole way right to the end. Then he leaves, and more importantly then, we see that Jesus dismisses the crowd and then goes to a place to pray by himself, all alone. And what is true for him in this kind of thing is true for us. There are occasions when we need to dismiss the crowd and go to a place to be alone and pray, all by ourselves. It doesn't have to be a literal crowd. You know, you may not have crowds of people following you, but just ask a young mother with two children if she needs some time alone, if she doesn't feel sometimes like a crowd of kids is following her every move and making demands of her. Grandparents who are babysitting their grandchildren often feel the same way. But it also means that we dismiss the crowds following us on Facebook or other social media. It means that we have to take time alone and dismiss the thoughts that obsess us and crowd our hearts and minds, the ideas that crowd our hearts and minds, and to turn off the news, to put down the paper, and just be alone. Now, when we do that, it's kind of scary. No more crowds, no more distractions. We're left alone with our thoughts, but we need to do it. That's what it takes to listen to God, to make time alone with God, just like Jesus did. So verse 24 then, by this time, that's Jesus, but by this time, says Matthew in verse 24, but by this time the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land, for the wind was against them. We can just now picture the disciples out on the water struggling, you know. Matthew has three ways of saying that's tough going. The waves are battering the boat, they are far from land, and the wind was against them. Ever feel that way, that the waves are battering your boat, that you are far from land and that the wind is against you? I remember fishing with a friend on a lake in eastern Washington a few years ago. It was a good day, but the afternoon wind came up, and it really started blowing. And boy, you know, on a lake of any size, the wind can really get going. And it did that day. And I had a small pontoon boat, which worked pretty well in the wind, and I anchored up on one side of the lake, and I kept on fishing. My friend, though, was in his favorite canoe. He loved canoes. He grew up in Pennsylvania, and for some reason, he just loved canoes there as he was growing up. And so he was in his canoe, and canoes do not do well in the wind. And as I was fishing, I could see that he was struggling, but I wasn't too concerned. He wasn't in any danger or anything. But I could see he was struggling. And then an hour later, I saw my friend walking up the opposite bank. I called out and I said, "What happened? Where's your canoe?" He said, "The wind blew me to the end of the lake and I couldn't paddle back, couldn't row back." So I paddled over and we walked down the length of the lake, hoisted up this canoe and walked it back to the other end. A couple of months later, he bought a pontoon boat. He never fished in that canoe again. The wind was against us that day. You may feel the wind is against you at times. Maybe even right now, maybe you're worried, and we all are. You're worried about your family and friends in the midst of COVID-19. You're perhaps worried about yourself. We're worried about the economy. We're worried about our jobs. We're worried about our savings. We're worried about our community as the wind blows against us, as the waves batter us economically and in our health. We wonder about the winds of change blowing against our church and all churches in this time. The culture has changed so much that we feel like we're far from the land that we used to be so familiar. The wind of our own breath is even against us these days for fear of breathing a virus on each other. Like the disciples, the wind does indeed seem to blow against us at times. And so that's what's going on then with the disciples. Jesus up on the mountain praying, the disciples struggling out on the water. Now verses 25 to 27. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Immediately, we are told, Jesus assures them, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." Now, you know, sometimes when someone says, "Don't be afraid," it can seem kind of trite, you know, and it doesn't help all that much. It sort of depends, I guess, on who says it. And in this case, it is Jesus, the same one who came walking to them on the water. In the ancient world, the sea was a symbol of chaos, darkness, even of evil. They didn't know what was, you know, under there in those days. No scuba diving, no submarines, no way to know what was lurking there under the surface. I did a little scuba diving when I was younger, and I didn't really like it before or after a dive when I was just sitting there bobbing on the surface, you know, waiting for the boat or waiting to be taken back up on the boat. Waiting, just bobbing on the surface, waiting for some creature, you know, to grab me from below by the legs. I've seen Jaws, the movie. Now I know what happens. And I always felt more comfortable when I put on my mask and started to dive. Then I could see what was underneath the surface. I would rather see that great white shark coming for me than being grabbed underneath the surface by that shark. The first words of the Bible in Genesis 1 describe this. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." Matthew is telling us that Jesus is the master of the deep, that he rules over our chaos and confusion and darkness, and that he is the light in that darkness. Whatever fears and anxieties are swimming around within us or in our midst, Jesus is there saying, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." Verses 28 to 33. Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened and beginning to sink. He cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Now, we know that Peter is somewhat, you know, impulsive. He's always jumping into the water or some kind of trouble. But it's not just his impulsiveness here that drives him. He wants to do what Jesus is doing. And that's good. And that's what every disciple then or now wants to do. We want to do what the Lord is doing. We watch and then we say, my turn. Let me try. And we try to do what Jesus does. And you see how Peter then puts this. Lord, command me to come to you on the water. So it's not just impulsiveness. Lord, command me to come to you on the water. He waits for the Lord's command before he jumps. And we can presume here that he won't jump unless he hears that command. And not only that, he wasn't just planning to go for a stroll on the water with no destination in mind. He's going to go straight for Jesus. Command me to come to you. Now, that, no question, that first step is a doozy. You know, notice that Peter's decision to step off the boat takes place under stormy conditions. That's the way life is. It's often a difficult choice between stormy conditions in the boat or stormy conditions outside the boat. It's often a difficult choice between two less than ideal options. A woman who is trapped in an abusive relationship knows this difficult decision. Do I stay or do I step into the unknown? Maybe you've been in a kind of dead-end job and you wonder, do I stay or do I leave and just take my chances elsewhere? And again, in our time, COVID-19 has put us in this position too. Do we lock down and watch the economy suffer, our economy suffer, or do we open up and watch COVID cases spread? Which is it going to be? So when life presents us with challenges, and I think this is what we want to say as much as anything this morning, when life presents us with challenges, we can either stay in the wave-battered boat, the wind against us, or we can get up, step out of the boat, and take our chances with Jesus on the water. The first step is the hardest, but as Presbyterian pastor John Ortberg says, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. And Jesus is saying to us, come. Bible teacher Dale Bruner translates, come on. Come on, church. Remembering now that Matthew is writing to the church of his time. Jesus is saying, come on, church. It is an invitation to the church, to us, to walk with and toward Jesus in turbulent times. Come on, church. Come on. Walk with me on the water, and I will be there with you when you fall. Which is exactly what happens to Peter. Peter falls. And it happens to us. Peter falls, and when he looks, when he starts looking around at the water and the wind, he gets scared and falls, and Jesus catches him. Peter, like most of us, is a mixture of faith and fear, of feats and failure. That's the way we are, you know, the way Peter is. And Jesus' rebuke, I think, is gentle. Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? I think he says it with a smile on his face, maybe even a chuckle in his, the way he says it. Now, we can emphasize the failure, the fall, you know, and that's easy to do. We often do. We even criticize ourselves for our lack of faith in the tough circumstances of life. We do that far too often, I think. But we often forget what Peter really did here. When they get back in the boat and the wind calms down, Jesus is in the boat with them now. And they're all amazed at Jesus. Truly, you are the Son of God. And Peter, too, amazed with the Lord. But perhaps discouraged, too, that he couldn't keep going with Jesus. But then I imagine that one of the other disciples, Andrew, his brother, or maybe James or John, turns to him and says, you know, it's too bad you fell, but don't forget, for a minute there, you were walking on water. He invites us to come, Jesus does, to walk with him and toward him on the turbulent waters of life. Let's take that step together and see where it takes us. Amen.